Good evening and welcome to the Tuesday, September 7th, 2010 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin our regularly presented agenda, I would like to turn to Alderman Randy Haven O'Donnell for consideration of the resolution.
Yes, we have a resolution appointing a town clerk before us, and I'd like to move that resolution.
Second.
All right. The resolution would appoint Catherine Wilson to serve as town clerk for the town of Carrboro and would have her employment commence with the town on October 4th of this year at a salary of $56,000. The motion's been moved and properly seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. Our congratulations to Ms. Wilson, and I think the people of the town of Carrboro can look forward to getting to know her soon. All right. Before next is our either Paul Wiss or Colin Neal here? So both of y'all are here. Okay, great. All right. First, Richard Jamie Field, if you would please come up to the assistant town clerk's desk right here, stand in front of Matt Eifert. Mr. Jamie Field has been appointed by the Board of Aldermen to the Planning Board and is hereby receiving his charge as a new member of the board.
As a planning board member, I will make studies and recommend to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen plans, goals, and objectives relating to the growth, development, and redevelopment of the town and the surrounding extraterritorial planning area. Develop and recommend to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen policies, ordinances, administrative procedures, and other means for carrying out plans in a coordinated and efficient manner. Make recommendations to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen concerning proposed conditional use permits and proposed zoning map changes as provided by sections 1557 and 15322 of the Carrboro Land Use Ordinance. Perform any other duties assigned by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. Having heard the duties of a planning board member of the town of Carrboro, I, Richard Jamie Field, agree to perform the aforementioned duties of the planning board member of the town of Carrboro, of which I am about to enter, according to my best skill and ability.
Thank you.
Sign right there, please. Like to turn around before.
Congratulations and thank you so much.
Yay!
Really? Official now. All right.
I think that's ever happened.
Largest crowd assembled for just such an occasion.
Largest crowd of supporters
for
the planning board swearing
in. All right. That's nice, though.
Hopefully you can show equal enthusiasm for Paul Wiss and Colin Neal. If both of you come up together. Paul and Colin have been appointed to the Arts Commission for the town of Carrboro. They're both appointed to the same commission, so we'll have them jointly hear their charge.
There'll be an aesthetics test.
As an Arts Committee member, I will recommend to the Board of Aldermen a policy for the selection of art to be displayed in or on public facilities, coordinate arrangements to have artwork displayed on town property in conjunction with the staff of the Recreation and Parks Department, work collaboratively with the community on projects related to the arts. Members of the Arts Committee may assist in community fundraising activities, but any funds received by the committee or by members acting in their official capacity must be accounted for, and all expenditures by the committee must be made in accordance with the provisions of the Local Government Budget and Fiscal Control Act. Such funds may be received and expended by the town only for purposes for which the town is statutorily authorized to expend public funds. Report to the board as requested and perform such additional duties as the board may request from time to time. Having heard the duties of an Arts Committee member for the town of Carrboro, I, Paul Weiss, and I, Colin Neal, agree to perform the aforementioned duties of an Arts Committee member for the town of Carrboro, of which I'm about to enter, according to my best skill and ability.
Sorry.
If you'll turn around and greet the board.
It feels like the end of a soccer game or something. All right.
Richard started a new carver tradition.
Rainbow soccer, anyway. All right. Now, are there any? Are there any persons who came to speak on matter on some matter that's not on our printed agenda? Okay. Thank you for not coming. Mr. Manager, we are on our consent agenda.
Item one is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of August 24th and August 31st. Item two is a town code amendment related to parking on Renee Lynn Court. Item three is a request to issue a permit for a temporary street closing and usage permit for St. Joseph CME Church's Frangelism and the Park event. Item four is a request to set a public hearing on the extension of general obligation bond authority. And I might mention parenthetically that the local government commission did today vote to grant the town the authority to extend permission for three more years. Item five is an ordinance rewriting chapter two of the town code. Item six is a resolution adopting a code of ethics for the Board of Aldermen. Item 7 is a request to cancel the September 14th board work session. And item 8 is a resolution requesting an appointment to the Orange County Animal Services Advisory Board.
Move the item.
Second.
I have a minutes correction.
Correct away.
Okay. On page 5, it says at the top, the following resolution was duly adopted and records 3 ayes and 3 noes, which I believe would mean that it was not adopted.
It was not adopted.
Yes. So I'm not, whatever the correct wording
we'll
is.
We'll put the word was, not in there.
It was not adopted.
Okay.
Thomas. Good. All right. That's a good catch, Dan. Yeah. Well,
someone's got to read these things.
And apparently it's you. All right.
We'll take
that as a friendly amendment, I'm assuming. All right. All those in favor of the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. That puts us on item D1, a continuation of a public hearing on revised design for Smith Level Road improvements.
This is the continuation of the public hearing on Smith Level Road. Jeff Brubaker, our transportation planner, is here to give you all an update on the work that DOT has been doing since last summer to try to address the issues that were raised at the last hearing. And I just mentioned that Mike Mills with DOT has graciously agreed to be with us again tonight, and I'm sure Mike will be prepared to answer any questions that Jeff doesn't cover. So, Jeff.
Oh, your heart, Jeff. What happened to you?
That's shoulder surgery.
Oh, bless you.
So be easy on him. Well, he's already had one arm twisted.
No rotten apples.
I'll try to behave the best I can.
Okay, so the report in the agenda packet in this presentation addressed the questions raised at the June 1st public hearing continuation on Smith Level Road. The planning process for improvements, of course, dates back to the 1980s, and communication between the town and NCDOT on the currently proposed design and its modifications have taken place since late last year. The presentation addresses the board's questions and comments from June 1st, including those related to eastbound left turns from Willow Oak Lane, construction limits, right-of-way, and clearing, NCDOT reaction to the TAB recommendation that was adopted on May 20th by the TAB, the raised median between BPW Club and the bridge, the tree canopy along Smith Level Road, and information about road safety audits, which was a request from a citizen at the June 1st meeting. Looks like the presentation's a little bit offset. There we go. The first question the board asked was related to eastbound left turns on from Willow Oak Lane onto Smith Level Road, and the comment was provide further justification for the no left turn in the proposed design from Willow Oak out to Smith Level compared to BPW Club Road. And after communicating with NCDOT, NCDOT staff have reaffirmed the existing design based on the safety justifications provided previous to the June 1st public hearing continuation and cannot support a full movement crossover that would allow eastbound left turns from Willow Oak Lane onto Smith Level Road. The current design is a directional crossover that allows northbound left turns into Willow Oak Lane, into Berry Hill neighborhood, but the left turns out of Willow Oak Lane have not been added to the design. The justifications, NCDOT provided two justifications prior to the June 1st meeting. The first related to reducing the vehicle conflict points. These are the potential points of accidents occurring between vehicles. Generally, the research shows that there's about a 35% overall crash reduction compared to undivided roadways when there is a median, a non-traversable median in place that restricts certain turn movements. And then on June 1st, staff followed up with an accident report from the last 3 years showing that there were two accidents at the intersection. And you recall that none of those accidents related to left turns. Both of those accidents related to vehicles striking an animal. That was for the last three-plus years at the intersection of Willow Oak and Smith Level. But if you recall earlier, the Smith Level Road Task Force, when it issued its report in 2007, also looked at accident history along Smith Level Road. And we looked back through earlier accidents from the Smith Level Road Task Force, and we did find that there were two accidents total at the intersection, and there was one accident in 2004 that involved a vehicle turning left out of Willow Oak Lane that was struck by a southbound vehicle. So there was one in 2004.
And Jeff, is it the general position of DOT that one accident in a 10-year period is sufficient to restrict that kind of movement?
Well, this was just an additional piece of information that we found. I think that, in general, NCDOT's justifications were, you know, reiterated on June 1st when they referenced the how the median reduces the vehicle conflict points, and the second bullet point, which I'm about to get to, regarding the spacing of full movement crossovers.
Yeah, I guess my question is, if there were no actual vehicle conflicts, why would there be a need to reduce vehicle conflict points?
Well, I think that any time you look at an accident analysis, you have that asterisk that it's such a small sample size that you really need, and nobody wants this, but you would really need a lot of accidents to be able to conclude from that premise that, you know, that an intersection design modification was needed. I think that in general, NCDOT feels that, you know, just because the design reduces the potential accident points, that they feel that is a justification for reaffirming the need to restrict left turns at that intersection.
But don't we have a sample of presumably many thousands of left turns over that 9-year period on that intersection, and only one accident reported? Because it seems to me that that's a compelling study right there.
I can't speak specifically for NCDOT's position, but my take on that would be that would be a necessary but not a sufficient condition for leaving that left turn open. So in other words, even if there were limited accidents at that intersection, that alone wouldn't justify leaving that left turn open. You know, you would need additional reasons to overcome the justifications that NCDOT has presented, namely, just regardless of the accident history, the fact that closing off the median does limit the movements. So,
I'm sorry to belabor this point, but it's important to the residents there. I mean, isn't that true of any intersection anywhere, that if you remove one of the turns, one area of movement, you're reducing the risk of the accident? But if there are no actual accidents, then what's the justification? That's, you know, I guess maybe when you're done, maybe Mike could speak to that. But yeah, it just, you know, it seems to me the argument you're making is, you know, it's something that could be, you know, it's something that could be applied anywhere. You know, we could close off my street and not let me drive out of my neighborhood because, you know, there's probably been at least one accident on Pathway Drive in the last 9 years, and that would prevent that accident from happening. But, you know, I'm not trying to make it absurd, but it kind of sort of strikes me that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's trade-offs.
Okay, well.
And kind of along Dan's point. Hold on.
I respect Dan's questions, and I agree with them. I'd like to remind the audience, our citizens that are here, that our staff is presenting their best professional opinion in a very respectful manner, and I would request that our citizens treat him with equal respect and not laugh at what he says. Thank you.
Go ahead. To just further expand on what Dan just said, I'm surprised it's 35%, not 100%. If you create a barrier and you prevent any kind of movement through there.
Well, you still have the potential for right turn related crashes.
Oh, right. Okay.
The second justification that NCDOT provided prior to the June 1st public hearing continuation was that NCDOT's roadway design manuals guidelines for spacing of full movement crossovers stipulates a minimum of 1,200 feet. And so between BPW and Willow Oak, you have a distance of a little over 1,000 feet. So you have a shorter distance than is required in the roadway design manual for the number of full movement crossovers. There are additional justifications provided subsequent to the June 1st public hearing continuation by NCDOT on related to left turns. One was a travel time comparison. This was, of course, included in the community impact assessment from a few years ago. But according to model results, at peak hours, now and in the future, there's limited or negative travel time savings of turning left onto Smith Level Road versus turning right and making the U-turn at BPW Club. So if you left that left turn open, according to the model says, you know, you're not saving any travel time by taking a left turn versus taking a right turn and making a U-turn.
Hold on 1 second. Questions everywhere.
With the model, does it take into account, for example, that there are busy times and then there are not busy times? So, for example, it may be busier between, let's say, 7 and 8 o'clock, as opposed to if you attempted to make a left turn, say, at 11 o'clock a.m. to 12 o'clock when there's not, on a weekday when there is not that much traffic.
Yeah, you're right. This model specifically speaks to peak hours.
Okay. And then, and follow up, if I
can. Yeah.
So, but I guess my question is it for the peak hours of 8 and 9 and, let's say, my guess, 4 to 5?
I believe so, this general.
Oh, okay.
Seven to nine and five to seven, that okay. General range.
Jeff, first of all, I also want to thank you for being able to explain DOT's position, which I know is it's a tough thing to do. On this second explanation, all movement crossovers shall not be spaced any closer than 1,200 feet. So is that a new regulation, or how would it explain why Smith Level is the way it is right now, with that where it's accessible and it has been for, I don't know, 16 years or whatever?
That would probably be, I don't know for sure, but that would probably be a relatively new specification. There's a lot of existing roads around that have, you know, plenty of left turns, space closer than that, but, you know, this, a lot of the research that has been done on, you know, the crash reduction of non-traversable medians has been done in the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've really learned a lot in terms of traffic safety from, you know, the time when the current Smith Level Road was built and now. So I would assume, without knowing for sure, that has something to do with it, is that the progression of research on traffic safety.
And the number of vehicles that are traversing that from BPW Club to 54, what's the average number per day?
That stretch is around, I believe, 13,000 to 17,000, depending on who
comes. So 13,000 a day multiplied by 360 days a year multiplied by 6 years.
Those are the vehicles going straight on Smith Level. So the left turning vehicles. Sorry to interrupt, but the left turning vehicles. We estimated at the last meeting, you may recall, about 350 to 400. Make left turns from Willow Oak onto Smith Level.
Yeah, but it takes the other, you know, 1,200 vehicles coming up or down to smack into one making a left. So, you know, I mean, just proportionally, it just seems, you know, a very low proportion that is at risk. I'm just really surprised that just the numbers don't bear out what Dan was saying about, you know, whether or not we cut that off to, you know, to respond to, you know, this a more updated model.
When I presented the accident from 2004, I didn't mean to say that was a sufficient reason to close the meeting.
Well, I understand. But that's the only one that occurred in.
That was reported.
Yeah.
Jeff, I have two questions. One is, I can't recall the detail of the proposal of the median at that very point. If we were trying to have left turns, is it a little further to get over into that lane and go left than it would be now because of the width of whatever new median would be in there?
In terms of turning left from Willow Oak onto Smith Level, it would be if we were to have a full movement crossover, it would probably be a similar turn as occurs now.
As is now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And second question, I mentioned this last time. Did DOT reconsider the idea of limiting left turns to certain peak hours, like an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening?
We didn't discuss that subsequent to June 1st. We did discuss that prior to June 1st, if you recall, and I think the issue there is enforceability. Is, you know, can you enforce that limited left turn during peak hour?
But it still would address some of these concerns of DOT and some of the concerns of the citizens to not always have to do the right-hand turn.
Right. Because there is a limited left turn in downtown.
Yeah.
We did, one thing we did discuss with NCDOT is a possibility of leaving the left turn open and then the town agreeing to a situation where the town agrees to close it if the town asks for future widening of the road. And NCDOT still reaffirmed its position that it's currently an unsafe situation, and that the restricting left turns is what's best for safety. There is such a thing as a full movement crossover that protects vehicles and allows vehicles to kind of merge into the roadway, but that's much more typical for, you know, 4 or 6 lane arterials than a 2 lane road, and that would require a much wider right of way and a much larger footprint if something like that were to be considered.
So Jeff, that's what I wanted to clarify, that these standards that we're talking about are specifically for 2 lane roads. They're not like holdovers for when DOT was looking at a 4 lane road. Is that correct?
As I understand it, these standards are for arterials of a certain speed, certain design speed, and a certain number of lanes.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask him one question?
Sure.
The size of medians, how is that calculated? Is it the size of what they think the average car size is going to be, or is it the size of the average, if you will, what do you call those things? Big trucks.
Semis
are having a 50-year-old moment before I'm 50. And
just wait, honey.
Some things I don't want to remember anyway. So I kind of want to know why this particular is the size of this particular road determined by, again, what you just said earlier, the certain design speed that they're expecting it to go, and the certain is that why the width of it is selected?
Yeah, the median width needs to be wide enough to accommodate the design vehicle, so whatever vehicle you think might use it.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the vehicle's too wide so that its end sticks out into the roadway, that's not a good situation for anyone.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you have more you wanted to present on?
So as I said before, what's currently proposed is a directional crossover that allows left turns. This is Smith Level right here. This is Willow Oak. It allows left turns into Willow Oak,
but not out.
And as opposed to the earlier design, which was right here, which is a right-in, right-out design, which does not allow left turns into or out of Willow Oak. And when we were talking with NCDOT, we talked about the benefits and negatives of having a directional crossover. And the benefits are you do serve about 50 vehicles who make the left turns into Willow Oak. At the same time, if you do have a directional crossover, that limits the ability to have a crosswalk right here, and it also limits the landscaping or the green space on the median. So that's another point that we talked about. That's one of the trade-offs of having a directional crossover. Moving on to clearing and right-of-way, this addresses board comments and questions 2 through 6, and you can see the specific language of the questions in the memo. The cross-section adjacent to Berry Hill has been modified, and I'll get to that in a second, but we clarified with NCDOT their practices on clearing for roadway improvements. And they reiterated that NCDOT clears only what is necessary to contain the permanent components of the project. So the travelway, the bicycle and pedestrian facilities, the side slopes and the drainage structures. The revised design depicts expected clearing limits based on the slope stake line. So if I have the design ready to pull up if anybody wants to refer to it. And we can see there where the slope stake line is. Mm-hmm. And beyond that line, there really won't be any cut and fill for the permanent project. There may be some construction easements, but beyond that line, there's no cut and fill needed. And NCDOT's approach is to clear only to that slope stake line.
And are you saying that's reduced from the previous, what was in the spring?
Yeah, that's my next slide. Yeah. Okay. So NCDOT has said that this is the most conservative approach in terms of it minimizes the clearing necessary for the project.
My understanding was that they wanted to have extra easement so that when they did have expecting a four-lane road in the future, they would have the ability to do that. Was that inaccurate, my perception, or were they really going to clear all that, or were they just purchasing an easement so that that space could be allocated for when they need a road?
Well, the design that we saw on June 1st was based on a non-curb and gutter design, so they needed those extra spaces for the vehicle recovery area. Mm-hmm. And I think your question will be addressed in the next slide when we talk about the changes made. So for that section adjacent to Berry Hill between BPW and the bridge, the right-of-way acquisition has been limited to intersections for site distance purposes. The existing right-of-way at that segment is about 90 to 95 feet. In response to the board's comments at the June 1st meeting, NCDOT has modified this section. So it is a curb and gutter section. And because it's curb and gutter, the sidewalks have been brought a little bit closer to the road. And so the width of that section has been decreased from 99.5 feet to 73.5 feet because of the curb and gutter design. Now NCDOT did say that this design is contingent on an agreement, which was suggested at the last meeting, that the town would pay for the cost of relocating the curb and gutter if the town requests a widening in the future. And the cost estimate for that, if that were to happen, would be $240,000. And that would be handled through the municipal agreement for the project. That would be a clause in the municipal agreement for the project. So to summarize, it's a curb and gutter design, and the width of the cross section has been reduced for the section between BPW and the bridge. There's also, because of the reduced width, there's also a smaller construction easement footprint, and we can see that if we pull up the map. One other point before I get to the NCDOT's reaction to the TAB's recommendation. The revised design also has a little bit less right-of-way acquisition on that small portion of BPW Club Road that is included in the project. So the next point the board brought up was refer the TAB's recommendation from May 20th to NCDOT for response. And you can see the complete recommendation from the TAB in your agenda packets. But I have posted the TAB comments here. So the first comment is, extend the sidewalks to reach the ends of the project and to connect to existing sidewalks. So this relates to the cross-section from Willow Oak Lane going north to the bridge. If you recall, there's a sidewalk that goes all the way north to the bridge on the west side, and on the east side, the sidewalk stops at Willow Oak Lane. So the question is, why stop the sidewalks there? And the response was that NCDOT wanted to stop the sidewalk at a location where pedestrians could cross, and there's a crosswalk at Willow Oak Lane. If you run that sidewalk up the east side, might be helpful. Would it be helpful if I brought up a map?
Yeah, probably.
Depends on what it's a map of.
So you can see here, I hope you can see here, the red right here is the sidewalk, and it ends right at Willow Oak Lane. Now, if you go north of here, there's no sidewalk proposed, and one of the reasons that we've already talked about is that there's no sidewalk on the east side of the bridge at Morgan Creek, so you don't want a sidewalk to nowhere. But at the same time, NCDOT said that, you know, if the Morgan Creek Greenway development is such that, you know, it is developed kind of at the same time as this project, it's not too difficult to add a sidewalk into the design that could then go further north and connect to the greenway if the design works out.
Jeff, my understanding is that sidewalk, it wouldn't make sense to mislead someone into going into a dead end.
Correct, but, yeah.
Considering that part of the reason we're really engaged in this process is we want bike and sidewalks, and after this project is done, we no longer will have that collaboration with the NCDOT, and as a consequence, the 30% of the sidewalk, cheaper cost. So I was wondering if it may not make sense for us to take advantage of this process and extend that sidewalk, and we could bury it or whatever, put a sign up and say, you know, don't go beyond this point, it ends at the end. And in that way, save 70% for when we do need the sidewalk.
I mean, what strikes me is the problem is that bridge was, when did we replace that bridge? That was only like 5 years ago or something. So that bridge is going to be the way it is with a sidewalk on it only on one side for, you know, another 35 years or whatever the useful life of that bridge is, probably something like that. So, you're saying, I appreciate looking into the future, but you're looking pretty far into the future.
You can hire an archaeologist to uncover it.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Manager.
To clarify, Jeff, the map we're looking at, is this the old version with the swale before the sidewalk? Am I reading that correctly?
This is the
new
version
with the curb and gutter?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Manager. I was just going to say two things. One, when you get to the bridge, it's Chapel Hill's jurisdiction. We can't do anything there. And the second point is that we might save 70%. Now, I don't know where the 30% would come from. we have 30% set aside that we hope will cover what's in the current design, and we have nothing in the sidewalk and greenway bond money to do any of this on Smith Level Road. So it would be a challenge to come up with our share right now.
Okay. That's a good point, too. Did you have anything further on that?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that as far as the Morgan Creek Greenway, there should be sidewalk on the west side at some point, but that the east side is Chapel Hill, which is, I don't know how far, and I don't know, Jeff, do you know what their intention is at the bridge as far as sidewalk?
Chapel Hills?
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is their intention is to connect the greenway below the bridge.
Right.
That would be something.
They're going to come halfway underneath the bridge.
Right. But it's not part of their plan to come up onto the roadway.
I don't know. That's
okay.
I think they did present a conceptual plan that showed the connection up to Smith Level Road only on the Carborough side.
Right. So I was just wondering
whether
their
final plan reflects that.
Exactly, and I think that was before. That was prior to our Morgan Creek plan, anyway.
Correct.
Okay.
I just have a follow-up question. When you refer to the crosswalk where people can cross at the sidewalk, are you referring to the light crosswalk?
I'm referring to what would be a marked crosswalk right here on the north side of the Willow Oak intersection.
No signal.
But there is, the sidewalk does extend up to the bridge on the west side, and although it's a lot of lanes to cross, it's kind of a scary crossing, there is a signalized crosswalk at the intersection of the Public Works driveway.
Right. Okay.
We don't absolutely know at this point that the greenway will wind up on the north side of the creek. Let me just point out.
Correct. That's one of two options.
We hope and believe it'll be on that side, but
yeah.
their engineering considerations.
Their engineering, we have, it's, we're waiting to see.
So if that were a priority, it might be best to, you know, if this project goes forward, to continue to monitor the Greenway development.
That's right.
To see whether that sidewalk can then be added. Going to the other end of the project, the TAB recommended that DOT extend the sidewalk from Woodcrest Drive on both sides of Smith Level Road to the beginning of the project. So if we go back to the design, if you'll pardon me one second. You can see here is Woodcrest Drive, and the previous design ended the sidewalk on the west side at Woodcrest Drive. So one of the changes made to the design is that a sidewalk has now been added going south on Smith Level that will connect to the existing sidewalk on the high school property, which is the red and white striped sidewalk right there. That's
scroll
candy
over
cane
a little
lane.
Further. Keep scrolling that way.
To the south?
Yeah. All right, so that sidewalk fairly extensive on that side.
Yeah. We talked extensively about adding a sidewalk on the east side of the project, south of Woodcrest Drive, and again, NCDOT's feeling was that the sidewalk terminates at a logical point at the intersection of Woodcrest, and that the appropriate time to consider to connect beyond this point would be during a future project. And also, as you go south, you're getting into outside of the town's jurisdiction, so you have access issues that are not in the town's jurisdiction that would likely have to be addressed before a sidewalk could be considered south of Woodcrest Drive. So this just summarizes the previous design is on top, and the modified design now includes a sidewalk on the west side of the road, south of Woodcrest Drive, connecting to the high school sidewalk. The next TAB comment was related to the footprint. If there was a way to reduce the footprint of the project, we think it would be a better, more attractive, less expensive, and more environmentally sound project. And this has been addressed previously related to the curb and gutter design that has reduced the cross-section width by 26 feet. The TAB also asked about the landscaping plan for the median proposed, they recommended that the plan include trees, that the trees be planted along the sides of the project where existing trees are removed. We talked with NCDOT about the landscaping plan. They said that landscaping plans typically aren't available at this stage of the project. Generally, about 0.75% of funds for total project funds are set aside to fulfill landscaping needs, and that they generally construct the project and then after the construction occurs, sign a separate contract with a landscaper so that they can plant trees, whereas the construction company, they may have planted rebar or something like that, and you probably don't want that. But they said that if there's specific landscaping goals that the town has, they can be addressed in the municipal agreement.
So, Jeff, would you see moving forward, say if we move forward on the project, that you, as part of your role as liaison to TAB, would work with them to bring those ideas into the agreement?
Yeah, I think that's something that I could do if they were willing to consider it.
Okay.
But we should, as a board, say specifically whether we want that, so that staff will be clear on what we're pursuing.
Okay.
The next TAB comment related to the design of the roundabout at Rockhaven Road. The TAB talked about modifying the splitter islands, which are the islands that are kind of like, they look like pork chops. They're on the approach of the roundabout. And this had to do with changing the deflection without getting into too many details. NCDOT commented that they felt the splitter island design was adequate, and they did not recommend any changes to that.
Jeff, I don't know if you've got a graphic. The one that they're proposing is, I mean, you don't have a graphic for us.
Do you have this, or could you put it up?
Sure.
Page.
C3.
We can put it up on the...
You want mine?
I got this one, too.
You can do it with one hand tied behind the back.
So the one that's currently proposed is the middle one?
This is a illustrative graphic from a guide, actually a European guide on roundabouts. So this is not an NCDOT document, but it kind of just illustrates what to do and what not to do. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this design right here where the vehicle comes in and then approaches the roundabout at such an angle where they can just zoom right through it. You want to make sure that the vehicle, when they approach the roundabout, can slow down and they turn. Right. And that's how you get the slower speeds that are generally associated with greater safety at roundabouts.
Like the one at Morrisburg. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the TAB's comment had to do with, well, could you go a little bit to this design, which really makes the vehicles turn. That's, as I understand it, more of what the European model is. The NCDOT has, if I may estimate, a design similar to this middle one, which makes the cars turn somewhat. And they said that they were fine with the design they had proposed. It's a standard roundabout design according to their guidelines, so they recommended no changes to that.
When they say standard, is it more costly to do the one up top than it is to do the one on the bottom?
I don't know about cost. You want to try and stay away from the one at the bottom.
Well, I mean, I'm not the one at the bottom, but one on top, the more European, if you will, roundabout as opposed to the one in the middle. Excuse me, not the one at the bottom, but the first two. I mean, is there a cost differential?
I don't know. It's similar design. I would probably hazard a guess that it's the minimal cost difference. Maybe a tiny bit less right of way needed for this roundabout design as opposed to this one.
That's right.
But I don't know for sure.
Okay. Thanks.
So the barrier is simply that's just not how they do it.
Yeah, this is more of the standard American roundabout design.
Standard American.
There are some roundabouts that are designed kind of poorly like this, and they
it seems to me, having used the one on Eubanks Road a fair bit, that that roundabout actually is almost not really fully centered on Eubanks Road. Yeah. And that there's one direction of travel that it really forces you to slow down quite a bit more than the other direction of travel. When you're coming westbound, you basically can take it at a somewhat higher speed than the eastbound direction. Am I right about that? Is this,
it's more fun going eastbound.
Definitely.
Right up until you roll your car. The circle on Smith Level Road, is it proposed to be at the center of, is it centered on the existing right of way?
Yes.
So it will not have that kind of double standard, if you will, on the design of it. Okay.
Thanks, Matt. So moving on, the next TAB comment related to the left turn at Willow Oak Lane, and we've addressed that in the first board comment. Mm-hmm. The next TAB comment related to adding pedestrian refuge islands on Smith Level Road between Culbreth and the village's apartments driveway. So if you can see the graphic here, here's Culbreth, here's the driveway to the village's apartments. And NCDOT has added two pedestrian refuge islands. You can see them in red right here and right here. And they serve to give a sense of relief for pedestrians crossing the road, especially older adults or persons with disabilities. And they also do have, in some cases, a traffic calming effect. So NCDOT has added two pedestrian refuge islands to the design. Heading north, the next TAB comment related to posting a bikes may take full lane sign on the northern portion of Smith Level Road from BPW Club going north. So that's a steep downhill, and there are some cyclists that might be able to get to a speed where they feel comfortable cycling in the roadway. So that was related to this comment. And NCDOT's response was basically, this is a discussion that takes place down the road. It's kind of a detail that is discussed with the division traffic engineer further on in the project development.
Can
just go ahead.
So typically, I guess, are there certain standards where they would put up a sign like that or not put up a sign like that, or that are just, I mean, typically it's discussed, yeah. I understand it's discussed nearing completion, but it may be helpful to know if what those standards may be prior to the completion of it.
Those standards are in the manual on uniform traffic control devices. Mm-hmm. I don't have that memorized yet. I'd have to check.
Next time, when your shoulder's better. Okay.
And the final TAB comment, at each signalized intersection with pedestrian signals, crossing time or pedestrian interval, to use the technical jargon, should be adjusted to accommodate the pace of children, older adults, and citizens with disabilities. And NCDOT has commented how on all of their plans, they've adjusted the assumed speed of pedestrians from 4 to 3.5 feet per second. So they assume a slower pedestrian, which means that in their designs they assume greater crossing time. And again, this is a comment that can very well be addressed with the division traffic engineer with DOT and with the town of Chapel Hill, who of course manages our signal system, at a further stage of the project development.
We prefer to think of our pedestrians as laconic, but
so that wraps up the TAB recommendation comments and the NCDOT response. We just have a few more questions and comments that the board raised on June 1st to address. And the next one is it possible to reduce or remove the median from the design? NCDOT, this was discussed somewhat when we talked about the left turn. NCDOT feels the median is an appropriate and necessary component for safety in the design. And we also talked about the median width needing to be a minimum amount of feet in order to make sure that vehicles can enter the median without getting out into the roadway when they're trying to turn. The next comment by the board asked for an overlay of the project construction limits overlaid with the tree canopy, and DOT has provided an overlay We have a paper copy that we can make available, but we also have a PDF version on the computer that I can pull up. It's a very long document, so I don't know if you wanted to look at any specific points or if I should go through step by step. But,
Jeff, are we able to compare the right-of-way and the effect on the tree canopy under the current proposal compared to what we looked at in June? So to gauge, you know, where we've gotten.
Well, I can bring up the overlay. It does have the outline for the modified proposal, which includes the narrower cross-section adjacent to Berryville. And here is, it's kind of like a copy of the big plan sheets that you've seen, but take out all the colors and just have outlines. So you can see it right here. As I said, the narrower cross-section on the northern end of the project results in a smaller construction easement footprint and no right-of-way acquisition except for site distance at intersections on the northern end of the project.
So there's no additional right-of-way beyond the current right-of-way? Is that what you're saying?
There's no additional right-of-way for the northern section that we've been talking about. There is some additional right-of-way acquisition south of there, south of BPW.
Okay. No additional beyond what's in place now?
Yeah, except for the intersection, the site distance at intersections for the northern section.
Unless, like the neighbors, unless their property adjoins or abuts one of the intersections, their property should not be affected.
Yeah,
their
lot lines are not affected.
It might help to just take a glance at the color map and show. Excuse me one sec. So this is the northern end of the project, Willow Oak Lane and Smith Level. The orange represents existing roadway. The yellow represents new roadway, and this is where bike lanes are going to go. The red, if you can see it, represents the sidewalks. The dark green represents existing right-of-way, and the light green with hatches represents construction easement. The light green without hatches represents additional right-of-way acquisition. So you have some right-of-way acquisition at the corners for site distance reasons, and you have some construction easements on the project.
So those construction easements, is it correct to interpret that as an area that might in fact be cleared during construction for some purpose or another, but then would be restored subsequently by the property owner or by DOT?
I assume that there may be a chance that some areas of the construction easement could be cleared, but nothing in the because it's a construction easement, it's by definition it's temporary, and it would revert. It would not be a permanent right-of-way acquisition. I can't speak
to. So it's not like where I used to live, where I had a public service easement in my yard, and you know nothing. You know that had to be kept cleared forever because there was a gas line there.
Yeah, it's a temporary. According to this design, it's a temporary construction easement.
Thank you.
For the hatch, the sort of greenish hatch part.
For the hatch part.
Could you tell me a little bit about what that means? Like what will be happening in that area, in the hatched area?
I'm not the best person to answer that question.
Okay. That's fine. I'll wait until somebody can.
We'll ask Mike, in a little bit about that.
Okay, thanks.
So this is the is the layout that was provided.
Storage.
Yeah. The final question that the board asked on June 1st related to possibility of a road safety audit for the revised design of Smith Level Road. Just to provide a background for public who might not have a context, road safety audits are formal safety performance examinations of an existing or future road or intersection by an independent multidisciplinary team. And they typically include a process that involves selecting a team, you know, traffic engineers, planners, citizens, elected officials, advisory board members, and so forth. And then basically data gathering and analysis, and then 2 to 3 days of actually field visiting. So 2 to 3 intensive days where you're out on the roadway and you're looking at the existing conditions. You have some more meetings and stakeholder input sessions, and then you prepare a report that kind of makes recommendations as to what are the missing links in terms of safety, what are some of the unsafe areas that might not be visible to the untrained eye. So that's kind of the background on road safety audits. The board asked staff to look at the time and cost considerations of road safety audits. For that, we consulted 3 road safety professionals well-versed in road safety audits. And I'd like to acknowledge Libby Thomas from the Highway Safety Research Center, who provided information and recommendations for who to talk to. We talked to an official at Federal Highway Administration and also a consultant who is well-versed on road safety audits. They found that the cost ranged from $5,000 to $16,000 for a road safety audit. It's typically around $15,000, but for shorter road segments, in this case, Smith Level Road is a shorter road segment, it's typically in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. And the time required, it varies widely depending on how thorough you want to be, but it ranges from anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to nine months. And, of course, that also depends on staff availability and what all you want to include in the report. So that's the background on road safety audits.
All right.
And that's the last point, so I'll stop there.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Let me just point out that we have 5 people signed up, and perhaps a few others who want to speak. But
and could we hear from Mike first on some of the points that were raised?
Because,
you know, that may also be helpful to the citizens who want to speak to hear.
Sure. I guess that makes sense. Yeah. Mike, could you join us up at the podium? Yes, please, if you would, sir.
Just a real quick question to Jeff. Do you recall the context in which the road safety audit was brought up? Is that something the citizen wanted for us to consider, or as part of this process, or
yes, and at the June 1st.
Is it too late for that process?
I mean, that's within our process. That's a decision for you guys to make.
We can decide.
It's not clear what the schedule is. Let's just say.
as always.
All right, Chief District Engineer for the North Carolina Department of Transportation for our district, Mike Mills, is here.
Mike, I guess I have 3 questions for you. The first has to do with the issues that I raised earlier regarding the turn. And I guess my question has to do with this, you know, this. I understand that you all have standards and that they're based on research and studies across many roads. And it seems, though, at some point the application of those standards must come into play against the lived experience of a particular road. And so we have the case here with the intersection in question, the left turns, where we have the one accident over a 9-year period, which to me seems extremely low. So I guess I'm interested in your comments on why does that affect how you look at the standard, if so how, if not why not?
It does in a way. We several years ago we did change our policy to where you won't see too many 5-lane roads anymore. It'd be 4-lane divided with the median, due primarily to safety. And we look at not just the conditions of the traffic out there today, but we're looking out 25, 30 years on what it would be in that situation. And I know at the June 1st meeting, they were talking about just one accident, and it was a couple with some dogs or whatever. But we got to keep in mind, how many near misses have we had out there? And I've gone through there certain times of the day, and it is during some peak time or whatever, where I've seen cars stop and let cars come out of Willow Oak to enter the stream of flow. And that can't be too safe a movement for that, especially now since we're doing all these improvements to assist the pedestrians, and especially the bicyclists using that road. So I got a feeling there'd be more bicycles on that road than it is right now. So we're looking primarily, come back to your question, Dan, of it's strictly safety. That's all it is. We're trying to project out something in the future and how can apply it right now.
Okay. And before I go on to my next question, I did want to acknowledge the work you all have done over the summer that have addressed a number of the concerns we've raised very effectively, I think. And,
well,
you know, that's all appreciated, I think, by the entire board.
Well, I know it was here at the June meeting, and the board requested that. And when I left the June meeting, I think some of the folks were here in the meeting that bombarded me out. That didn't bombard me. They politely asked about narrowing the footprint down with some curb and gutter, especially because they live down at the west side of the road with the bottom of the field. So they were getting a lot of not just cutting of the tree, but also drainage coming down through their facility to the house. So,
can you comment on the question about the construction easement and along that the Berry Hill side and how that affects those properties?
And I do have Patty Eason is our division construction engineer, so she'll be out here doing the construction of this project. So she's gathering all this information and putting it down. But primarily we have what's called a construction easement. And all it does is allow the construction equipment to go in and build the road. And it does revert back to the property owners. Now, we do not cut trees. We don't want to cut many trees. We want to save many trees as we can. So the construction easement is normally about 5 feet behind the slope stake line. And the slope stake is just where the ground, that field slope, hits the natural ground. So we got to have about 5 feet behind that for the construction equipment to go in and work. And we'll go out and we'll flag the area. We'll flag with the trees to make sure the guy stays off of that if he can. It's a whole lot easier if the trees are below the road, because we can bring in the dirt and it will not, you know, damage the roots. On the east side of the road, it's a cut section, which means we'll be up there cutting the slope, and we'll be cutting the tree roots on that operation, so the tree could die with that operation. But on the west side, we'll do everything we can to minimize construction activity. We're sure helping with the tree canopy. The thing with the tree canopy was a big issue, but some of those trees are fairly large, and the limbs already overhang the road. So we can go down and may not touch the tree, so the canopy stays where it is.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Dan. I mean to interrupt you.
My last question is a little bit tangential to what we're looking at this evening, but I also read over the summer that there'd been a pretty wide-ranging rescheduling or delaying of road projects across the state by DOT, and I believe what I saw in the paper is that this project was pushed back 2 years. Is that correct, to 2013?
That's correct, but it's still in the five-year plan.
Okay.
Our new process, we do have what's called a five-year plan, which carries us to about 2014. And those projects are ones that we want to have a 95% success rate on delivering those projects on schedule. So now, if it's 2013, it's just a matter of waiting when the board does approve the plan, and then it gives our guys time to make all these changes to the right-of-way plans and everything else. So it's strictly, that's all it is right now. So we're still in the five-year plan so far.
Thanks, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
I just had one question, and I understand you do plan for the future and everything, but what is sort of the demographic assumption you're making with regards to the growth for the expansion of Smith Level Road?
Our folks go out and look at the whole area. They look at even down into Chatham County. And I know that that is a sensitive area with folks coming out from Chatham up into Smith Level, but that's the way it is. I mean, right. Folks are going out. That area is developing like mad down through there. And it's just the way, you know, traffic's going to come down Smith Level. And we looked at it numerous times. And we did reduce it down up near Rock Haven a little bit. But
right.
Down near this area, they're saying it's still going to be enough traffic to warrant a probably a future four-lane divided. And we're still standing by that. But now the town, with this design, up to the town now, I mean, if the town can live with two lanes, that's fine. We're not going to push it. It'll be up to the town to finally come back and say, yeah, we're ready for four lanes. I won't be here, I know that. But
neither will I.
But that's where we're at now. And it is a pretty extensive model, looking at all surrounding areas.
I won't be here if I do that. Okay.
Thank you.
We have, I guess if you want to have a seat for a minute, Mike, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I know you've been working really hard on this for us. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Among many other things Mike's been working on for us, in fact. Okay. The first person signed up is Jason Henning.
Hello again. If possible, I do have a short slide.
I'm sorry. We, for our computer security purposes, it's got to be scanned in advance, which means, and I'll just mention this here so others will know for the future, that we really need to receive that sort of thing by, I think it's noon on Tuesday in order to be presented that night. So
no problem.
I'm sorry.
What it was, which I can email to you if you're interested, it was essentially the human view of what the impact on the trees were. Of course, now with this new plan, which I wasn't aware of at the time, hopefully there's a much greater difference on that. But seeing it from above with the tree canopy is a little bit harder to tell than it is by standing on the road and looking. So what I'd like to do is actually discuss some of the things that were brought up here, kind of going through in the order of the same that Jeff had done. Regarding the median, one of the things that was brought up and it was actually asked about was the design criteria for a 1,200-foot separation between the entryway. That's actually a requirement if there is a median. If there is no median, I believe the requirement is 51 feet between entrances onto a road. So by adding the median, it requires there to be 1,200 feet between it, and there's only 1,000 feet, or 1080 up to BPW. So by not adding the median, that requirement doesn't apply. The other thing that I actually am rather concerned about regarding the median is the safety. It has been brought up here that there is a pretty good safety record there. We have 9 years of study. There's one accident that involves a traffic collision, and it looks like we can expect a 35% reduction in the one accident. And I would say that a 10-year traffic flow study is actually a pretty good definition of a comprehensive study. So I think that's pretty good data. But the safety issue that I'm concerned with is the redirection of traffic. There is one pedestrian crossing between the bridge at Morgan Creek and up to Culberth Road. It also happens to be the busiest bus stop. And by restricting the left turns there, we are forcing all of that traffic to travel a minimum of one time through that crosswalk, because by forcing them to do a U-turn, you're actually traveling twice through the crosswalk. So what we're doing is we're redirecting the traffic flow there in an area that has proven itself to be safe over quite a long time into a pedestrian zone. And it's actually the intent of the design. There's no way around that by doing it. I guess I just want to make sure that we're thinking of it in those terms and we're aware of that. Another question that I had regarding the median is at the intersection of BPW. I brought this up once before, but hopefully the DOT understands what I mean. But there's actually creates a negative offset. So to the oncoming traffic, the left turn lane is shifted a little bit, and it blocks the visibility. So I'm wondering if that's going to be a problem.
Which, say it again, which left turn lane do you mean?
Well, if you're If you're coming down, if you're going southbound, by having the median there, it forces your car just a little bit to the right, so then when you're looking at the oncoming traffic that you're taking a left turn on, it's actually slightly blocked by any cars that are taking a left turn that would be going on the southbound that would be going west. So your cars, instead of being the two left lanes, instead of doing this, they're shifted away from each other.
At, for example, the Culverth Road intersection or somewhere like that you're talking about?
It would actually be at BPW.
At BPW?
Yeah. And actually, the other questions that I had, a lot of them have been addressed by the introduction of curb and gutters. I was really pleased to see that in the area that we live in. There was a lot of concerns with flooding and the runoff and the change of the grade. I am very interested in seeing what the new right-of-way and the impact of that would be. But aside from that, I will say that I'm very pleased with the progress that we have here. I've been involved in this for about 10 years, and this is really quite remarkable, the changes that have been done over the last couple of years. So I'd like to thank all of you for that. But at the same time, I hope some of these other issues that we're looking at, we can continue to push on. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Linda Levitch.
Good evening, and hello again. As Jason just said, I'd like to reiterate that I'm very pleased at the progress that we have made that the DOT has compromised towards the neighborhood's point of view, and I also appreciate all of you and your real understanding of our concerns. Just a couple of small points to reiterate about the median, the necessity for having the median there, which not only widens the road, but again blocks off our left turn northbound access out of Willow Oak. Not only would the cars have to go up the hill and make the U-turn at BPW and, as Jason mentioned, traverse that walkway twice, which is very heavily trafficked by pedestrians at all times of the day, crossing from one bus stop to the other. Besides that, the cars that choose not to take a right turn and make the U-turn, instead, many of those 350 cars will just continue all the way through the Berry Hill neighborhood and exit out on Orchard Lane and then take a left onto BPW and a left, down Smith Level. So for safety concerns, not only do we have to worry about the U-turn through the pedestrian crosswalk, but a greatly increased traffic flow through the neighborhood where many children are out at all times of the day. And several school buses do pass through there. I think that was all I had to add. Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda.
Thank you.
Terry Buckner.
Is that your first meeting back?
No, second.
Oh, well, good. So I'm glad this isn't the first topic that we've had to do.
Terry, before we get started, I love your hair.
Thank you. Yes, it's quite new.
It looks great.
I'm going to thank you again for pursuing on with this with us, both DOT and you. I want to say one more thing about the U-turn at BPW. I drive a very small car. I drive a little Honda Civic, and right now there's no way I could make a U-turn from Smith Level around BPW and go the other way. I would have to go into the bus turn lane in order to complete that turn. So I have concerns about kind of the philosophy of this. I mean, one of Jeff's first points was that This no left turn reduces the vehicular conflict points. And that may be a valid consideration, but I think the opposite consideration also needs to be made is what is the conflict with pedestrians and bicycles as a result of this decision. And just as a driver along the road, I think there are more possibilities for increased accidents by forcing the additional traffic into the BPW to do the U-turn or to make the left turn off of BPW than by prohibiting the left turn out of Willow Lane. So it's probability. There's no way to prove either way, but I do think that there needs to be that consideration. The other thing I would like you to talk about, since I can't show my pictures, I brought you the walkabout in pictures, and I did not know that I had to present those pictures ahead of time. But Jason and I went out, we took the DOT plans, and we measured everything. The parts that Jeff showed about the reduced footprint around Willow Oak, he didn't go back up to Culbreth Road to show how much the footprint is reduced there. When we did the measurements, the easement, all of the easement on the drawings going into the east side, is that the one where the nursing home is on the east side? Right.
Correct.
So going up there, if following those plans as they were drawn before, leaves about 6 feet between the edge of the drawing and the beginning of their patio. I mean, it's literally taking out everything that they were probably required to plant and do when the facility was constructed as a barrier with the road is going to be removed. And
Under the old plans.
And so we didn't see what the impact is going to be under the new plan. And so I would request that you ask for that detail to be shown. Let's see. And even with that, then I think you also need to ask for some stormwater review at that point along the senior center area. It looks, when you walk in there, like they already have some stormwater issues, so all of the drainage is going out into the berm area. And I am no stormwater engineer, but if you take the berm out, it's going to push everything back toward the facility. Just thinking logically, stormwater may not work logically. But my request is that you have an investigation of that to some detail. I would also like to make a suggestion. I think one of the nicest DOT projects in the town of Carrboro is Main Street from Town Hall down to 54. It has made that section of the road where I used to live very walkable. It's walkable, it's bikeable, traffic flows nicely, it's still aesthetically pleasing. It's a successful project as far as I'm concerned. I would like to see something like that on Smith Level, and I think that between what they've already given us, we can get that, and one of the ways to do that is to take the sidewalk away from the east side of the road. If we have pedestrian crossings at BPW, safe pedestrian crossings at BPW and Culbreth, there really is no need for that sidewalk, especially since it ends. And it ends at a place, again, where you need to look at the vehicular conflict points. Because crossing over from that ending of the sidewalk across to Willow Oak, it's the widest part of the road. There's no pedestrian crossing planned there. So it kind of gives a false impression if you're walking on there and it ends and there's no safe place to cross over to continue your walk. So those are my concerns. The impact of the left turn on the bike path and the bus stop at BPW, the removed tree cover and berm at the senior center and the stormwater potential problems there, and then the sidewalk on the east side. I think removing it makes it look more like Main Street, which works quite successfully now. Thank you. That's it.
Thanks, all right. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Charlie Hallman.
I'm Charlie Heilman. I should stress ahead of time that I'm the chair of the Transportation Advisory Board, but I'm speaking as a citizen of Carrboro. You've heard a lot of the comments that I had in the last meeting. A few things to point out is, I'm happy to see personally so many of the changes that we suggested. They've addressed well. In terms of we did very much consider the taking the U-turn at BPW. And at first it seemed like there would be more conflict, but if you think in terms of the pedestrians at least, the pedestrians are going to see the light to cross. At that given time, there's no U-turns. The U-turns occur when there is nobody crossing. So they're going to have the right to go either taking a left-hand turn. At that given point, there will be no pedestrian crossing. Now, granted, there are pedestrians that cross sometimes running to the bus, and that was a concern as well. But at least we know that there wouldn't be the conflict in terms of when they're supposed to cross. We also wanted to maintain the left-hand turn coming out of Willow Oak, not, at least the way that I saw it, was not because of the convenience of the drivers as much as it created a more of a barrier to slow people down. So the way it is right now, people are forced to slow down, which is exactly why DOT would like to put that in as a barrier, you know, to take that out as a barrier at least. And yes, it would end up being faster, and that's a concern. It's like, how can you possibly reduce the speeds of cars going down, especially going down the hill, because that's when they're going to fly. So we wanted to shrink things up some, and I think the DOT is offering to do that now, is to the reduced profile. That may end up decreasing the speed some. The sidewalk that is on the side opposite of Willow Oak would actually have a crosswalk there. So that sidewalk does end at a crosswalk. So if you don't have, if you have people crossing there at that point at Willow Oak where there is a crosswalk and you have a left-hand turn, it would not work. The main point, I think, is that this is largely a pedestrian and cyclist-friendly project. It's got a roundabout that is shown empirically in many studies to be safer across the board for pedestrians. And it has bike lanes, it had sidewalks. So it is a very, very much an alternative transportation project. That, there's always a balancing act. And if you make something that's friendly for alternative transportation, you're naturally going to make it more inconvenient for motor vehicles. You can't help it. And in this case, we're talking about making it more inconvenient for motor vehicles. They have to go up the hill. They take a U-turn. So there's going to be a give and take. It's been a long struggle to get there. And I think it's easy to say, it's not good enough, let's go back. But people really have to stop and think, where is where are we balancing ourselves with DOT? And how are we going to go back in the future and say that what's the next step if we're going to reject it from here? Okay? Thank you.
All right. And our final speaker is, or at least the final person signed up is Gregory. Is it Dido?
Dido.
If we have one more public hearing, I'll get it that time.
Good evening. And again, to reiterate what the previous speakers have said, that it's certainly very uplifting to see that there have been responses to the community from both the DOT and the board to some of the issues that have been raised for the past several months. I do wish to reaffirm some points that were mentioned tonight. And my intent may add some clarity to some of these counterpoints. As far as the DOT basis for reaffirming the ban on the left turn from Willow Oak, this is simply a cost-benefit decision. All right, does the cost of redirecting traffic in the manner as presented give you the benefit versus what the cost is of of the change that's going to come about from that? And I do want to first state that, as I'm in my previous presentation, I said that the NCDOT did, in fact, in their previous report, state that Smith Level Road is a significantly safer road than similar roads in the state. All right. I also said that there were approximately, we talk about 400 vehicles a day making that left turn. Over 9 years, 365 days a year, that's approximately 1.3 million vehicles have made that left turn, you know, estimated. And so out of that, you know, we had one accident, and so it's one in 1.3 million, which to me is a pretty good statistics. Now, of course, you know, my background as a QA engineer in statistics, you know, statistics is a way of projecting, you know, an expectation without having hard data there. Right. In this case, though, you know, we have 9 years of hard data with Smith over Rail, which has been pointed out. And at what point, though, you know, to kind of dovetail into the other comment, do you override the standard in the application presented because the actual application has enough data to support that the standard is not needed? The next point, as far as the limited or travel time impact on redirecting the traffic within Berryhill, again, as I stated last meeting, that there would be a large amount of carbon emissions that would be dumped into the neighborhood. I can't recall exactly how many, but I want to say it's in the 20 to 30 metric tons a year would be dumped in with the redirected traffic up through Berryhill. The other point, though, is that, as we've all agreed, there is a cyclical traffic rate along Smith Lovell Road. And certainly, we have definitely seen it in this past month when both the public schools and the university came into session. And you see that drastic increase in the traffic flow. During the summer, though, of course, it's practically non-existent. And yet, by banning the traffic, left-turn traffic from Willow Oak, we are, in essence, redirecting all the traffic through Berryhill during the summer when the children are home from school. And I have to ask, is the benefit of doing that worth the risk of, instead of causing one collision in 10 years out of 1.3 million, is to have a collision concerning a child? All right. That, you know, that is very, very concerning that, you know, we are attempting to predict something that we can already have enough data on, and yet somehow we can consider the opportunity of having a an accident involving a child, you know, as being, I guess, a result of you know, these changes. Next point is as far as pedestrian crossings. I guess the question I have is if we do put pedestrian crossings on Smith Level, is Smith Level Road traffic required to stop for them?
If there's a crosswalk?
If there's a pedestrian crossing.
If there's a crosswalk, then that's the state law.
They have to stop.
They have to stop.
Okay.
If they don't in town, I mean, it's law, but
it's state law. Right, but it is state law, though, that, you know, when there's a pedestrian in the crosswalk, you have to stop. We're talking about putting two crosswalks.
That's true. Anytime, I mean, unless the signal is against the pedestrian. But, I mean, actually, ultimately, if somebody's in the street, you have to yield to them if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, they say you can't just mow them down, but the law does call for people to stop. Obviously, there are but few crosswalks in North Carolina where that's well observed.
I'm sure. But I do know that I see it certainly enough that there is a conscientious effort on the part of drivers to observe that law. I mean, I do it myself. Certainly, you do occasionally not see someone as they step into it, but for the most part, you know, I think it's common courtesy. Do that. The last point I want to ask, and this came up in the last meeting concerning the right-of-way plan that was developed apparently around 1985. I'm curious, was there a need by Pulte Construction to disclose that information to the homeowners along Smith Level in the Berryhill subdivision, since there was apparently an overlap of the right-of-way to the property lines in Berryhill?
I'm sure the statute of limitations has run,
okay.
But it's
well,
a debatable point.
I mean, if I were a homeowner along Smith Level, and, you know, again, as I heard in the last meeting that right of way had been established since 1985, you know, here I purchased a home in 1990 without even knowing that, you know, half my backyard is potentially subject to being, you know, used up in a road project. And certainly, if, you know, if it's disclosed and people say fine, that's one thing. But, you know, for it not to be disclosed, you know, it just it was a question I had, because I do know that, you know, we do get these letters from the town concerning your road projects and other activities, you know, the Greenway, that, you know, when you're in a certain, I guess, you know, zone of impact, that, you know, those homeowners do receive letters. So I'm not sure, you know, how that carries over. It was just a thought.
I'm just going to say it's usually recorded on your plat map, and usually at your closing, your attorney should point it out to you.
Mm-hmm. Along with 1,000 other documents you're that right, you sign right, at the right. same time, of course. But
okay. You know, here. Well, again, I just want to. Oh, and also, to going back to the 9 years of history on Smith Level Road. You know, again, talking from the hard data of 9 years versus, you know, statistics, as well as, you know, does a 2 to 3 day intensive field audit of Smith Level in any way considered to be outweighing what 9 years of data gives you? Right. You know, I do, again, have to think that it has to be a consideration as to, you know, the history of the road versus projections based on new roads that have not been constructed yet. Again, does the application fit the model? You know, and there are, then by the way the plan's laid out, we actually seem to be putting pedestrians more at risk than the vehicles, which there have been shown to be extremely limited risk. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Dinos. Mr. Dito, thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the board during this public hearing? Okay. Board members.
Sure, I'll go.
You're one.
I guess when I look at what's before us tonight and think back where we were 15, 16 months ago, we're like maybe a 95% improvement from where we were to what the town wanted at that time. And I think that the other 5% is stuff that's pretty uncertain on the face of it, and that I'm not sure that it's worth further deliberation or that necessarily that there are areas, as we've discussed with DOT already this evening, that we're going to see further change in regard to the left turn and the median, those kinds of issues. So I guess I'm satisfied to move. I mean, I don't want to do this prematurely if there's more discussion that people want to have, but I'm certainly satisfied to move attachment A with the direction to staff to proceed with this project as laid out before us this evening.
That'll probably be procedurally. It'll be helpful to have that motion on the floor.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay.
I was just concerned about, and I hadn't thought of this before, seen it before, the impact on the continuum of care facility on the corner.
Right.
Particularly, I think it could be very disturbing for the residents there, and that's their, that's kind of their higher level of care building. I think it could be disturbing to some people there to have the road move that much closer. Do we have any details on that?
Well,
this is the first I've heard of it.
Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but the citizen comment was based on the old plan.
Okay.
And what we've been told this evening is that the current plan doesn't add any right-of-way there.
So even there.
There shouldn't be any encroachment. Jeff, is that correct? That there shouldn't be any encroachment at that spot beyond what there is currently?
Or we have an opportunity to see the plans. I mean, they were alluded to. But
where is the paper copy of it? Okay. Before we vote, we'll attempt to get an answer to the question, what are the right-of-way impacts at that site?
Okay.
Jack, do you want to?
No, I just before we vote, I want to be real clear that we're not having a negative impact on
Randy,
those folks.
And Joel.
Well,
actually, my question is going to be of Trish, but maybe, Jeff, you can answer it. Terry had a great question about the stormwater impact with the changes and elimination of berm. How would you respond to that?
I think that's a question that's outside of my expertise.
Is that a Trish question?
That's probably a Mike Mills question.
No, yeah, okay. It's a Mike Mills question.
Would you?
It's 10 feet long. That thing is 10 feet long. Can you lay it out on the table that in the room behind us there?
So there's he just pulled it up.
And yeah, let's finish with this.
Any of you who want to take a look at that, please feel free to walk into that back room and take a look at it on that table. We may do that before we vote as well.
I'd like to do it before we vote.
Yeah, well, we'll probably take a 5-minute recess before we take our final vote on this, so we can do
Jeff,
that.
Jeff, are you answering Jackie's question? Because I wanted to get to Mike about the stormwater.
Sure, yeah. Well, pulled up the map for between BPW and Village's apartment driveway.
Right, so there would be...
It looks like they're picking up some temporary construction easement.
Construction easement. I wonder if they could have extra sensitivity to who it is that's living there, because there are some... It's kind of a high...
Okay, maybe we can work on some language
group
with respect to that in the resolution.
Yeah.
Preschool in that building too.
But I think some of the there are people that have a higher vulnerability to stress.
It shows the wall right here. Mm-hmm. It shows the facility, so you can see how close it's
getting. Right, it says wall on the map there.
Yeah. And it's the construction
that
easement.
That wall is what, the patio, the edge of the patio, basically?
Yeah.
The area where the patio is, about halfway down is their assisted living facility, and then the other half going down towards BPW is the Alzheimer's unit.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we need to deal with
okay.
I mean,
well,
it could be disturbing to them, Wendy. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Trisha's...
okay,
Mike,
go ahead.
Would you be able to answer my question, or actually, I think it really initiated with Terry about the stormwater and with the elimination of berm?
Is that... I'm trying to think, where is that berm right now, Jeff?
I think it would be this is existing right of way that's outside of the existing roadway, so it would be probably close to where the proposed sidewalk is.
Yeah, it's real steep there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's real steep, it'd be a weird.
So
the orange on that image is the existing roadway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see, it doesn't, to the extent that it comes notably closer to the building, it's actually mostly the sidewalk that's doing that in the long term.
But even, like in the short term, that construction easement right off the
Alzheimer's
wing could be problematic.
I follow you. I'm just pointing out the long term.
Right.
Okay.
So how would altering that berm affect stormwater?
Well, we got curb. Is that curb and gutter in that section right there, Jeff?
Yes.
So that would take care of some of the water right now that's going to the berm or the ditch section.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll go down in the curb and gutter and then go out to a approved it or another basin or where the catch may be.
Mike, is it fair to say that what the construction easement, what the use of that, and what the activity is going to look like, it looks similar to maybe what we've been seeing on Fayetteville Road with... those of us that have driven up and down there, the impact on the street and the neighbors and so on?
Yes, it could be, Lydia. We could be glad to look at that. We can try to eliminate the construction if we can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know right now. I'm trying to picture what thing looks like, whether it's in a cut section or field section. Mm-hmm. If it's in a cut section, we can have better success with reducing that construction easement down than in a field section. We'll certainly look at it and try to do, something with that senior citizen in mind, trying to at least mitigate some of the stuff that we do out there.
Is that berm on the right of way now? Is that what we're saying?
Terry, is that correct?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, it is.
She says yes.
I'm wondering if maybe if it's a matter of where to put equipment, that if you had a conversation with the administrators of Shepherd House, whether it may be possible to come up with an agreement that equipment can like come up into the parking lot or something rather than be outside the windows of
right.
of people that it might, I don't know, some people maybe. Might love watching the equipment, but other people might find it disturbing. You know, some people.
The preschool is going to, the kids will love it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, the preschool, they will want to get out there and work with them. I think, Mike, you had said, or Jeff, that there will be flagging along the property owners' yards. Is there any expectation of, like, snow fencing or something to really screen away during the construction?
Yes, ma'am. We put up orange fencing. We really tried to designate those areas that we don't want him to encroach on. And we can discuss it at our pre-construction meeting with the contractor. If Patty's here, she can make sure that we try to emphasize those sensitive areas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I have to admit, this could be a fairly sensitive area. I mean, we don't need to be out there to do a whole lot of disturbance to the ground if you don't have to. But we do have quite a bit of existing right-of-way, which does create a little problem there. We've got to look at it, though, and try to minimize what we can. And I guarantee you we'll have orange fencing everywhere down through there.
Okay. I understand I'm speaking on a turn, but as far as voting to move this forward, this plan really just came to light today. I've never seen it before. I was wondering if
we'll consider.
Council has had a very good history of getting input from the citizens on all of these plans, and I don't feel that we really had an opportunity to even see it prior to this meeting. Would it be possible to make this public and allow some folks to look at it?
We'll consider that question as we go on here. Whether we care to take up this resolution at a later meeting so there could be some further review. All right. Do members of the Board of Aldermen have other questions?
I was curious about Terry's, especially in light of how expensive sidewalks can be. I was at one extreme earlier today, and Steve pointed out, you know, that's a cost that we may not be able to bear today. The question, and I have, you know, noticed some roads in Carrboro that have two sidewalks and questioned, you know, whether that is necessary, considering that there are other places that don't have any sidewalks where we could have better investment in our resources. So I'd be curious to see, maybe during the break, to see exactly what that would translate to on that map if we weren't to cut off a whole section on the east side of sidewalks. If it really isn't serving people, if people can actually get across to the other sidewalk, I mean, it facilitates our getting to know one another, too.
Can I extend that out into a question?
Sure.
Which is, I think Terry, at a previous meeting, was the person who made the point about the importance of the pedestrian connections on the east side south of Culberth Road, and that, in her estimation, the project stopped, I don't know, basically a long block short of where it would really be best to have it stop, because it would eventually interconnect with a greenway coming in from Southern Village in Chapel Hill. You know, I guess the question I wondered is whether DOT would consider, you know, flip-flopping some of this sidewalk construction if we gave up some sidewalk that maybe isn't as useful as we perhaps had imagined at one point, whether DOT would consider adding some on the other side further down where we wanted it, and they previously said no.
Where would this be?
Well, could Jeff, can you pull up
we'll press down to Raven.
From Woodcrest to Ray Road, which is essentially the next full block to the south on the east side of the road. What I don't remember is whether there were sort of technical problems with that.
You might point out where the city limit line is on that side, Jeff, because we can't go outside the city limits.
We could annex.
Done it before.
It's a very creative idea. All right.
Don't go there.
Which will hopefully remain in the realm of ideas.
See the red line? Is that red line not sidewalk already?
That on the west side, yes.
On the west side, not
but the point is that on the east side, it would have to come up a little further in order to connect with where the crosswalk, or I mean the greenway, is proposed to come in from Southern Village.
Mm-hmm. So to move this way.
And I mean, granted, the greenway could come out to Smith Level Road, and people could be expected to cross. But where it comes out, there's no traffic light, and obviously a crosswalk could be put in, but it wouldn't be likely to be a candidate for being signalized immediately before
a
roundabout. So
past the high school, like to the
Well, I don't know where is Woodcrest or no, where is Ray Road?
You're saying,
well,
yeah, Ray Road's up further south.
Yeah, further south.
Here's Ray Road.
And where's the city line? City line is back to
back.
The east.
Yeah. I see.
Northeast.
Oh, okay. That's not possible for us today.
Okay, so we cannot, because we 30% of it is
no,
Carborough.
I mean, no, you can do that, but it.
It's what 30% of the money is Carborough tax.
You said it, I did.
Dollars.
Right. But
so
it could
that
go,
money can't go to anything outside
right.
of town.
It could go from where the Southern Village Greenway is up north one block. It could capture at least that one block. Isn't that green path right there one that's expected to be the Southern Village Greenway, right where you just had the hand?
Next to the Thomas Schopler property?
Yes, next to Schopler. Adjacent. Isn't that where
is
it's
that
supposed
where it's
to be?
Is that where it's supposed to come in, or
somewhere
what?
Somewhere around there. We don't have a place.
There's no specific plan.
But there's a place where it ends, and then we have to figure out how to get it from there over to
Southern. I gotcha.
I'm going to keep this here.
So where is the town limit? On the
it's
east side?
It's directly north of that. West of it, sorry.
Comes down here. And then the plans say that it goes here.
Yeah, they're probably right.
So, but could we not at least capture that one block there? From that green.
I mean, we're talking about, if we eliminate all that sidewalk on the east side, we're talking about that's a very significant portion of the cost of the total project.
If the green connected to something, I mean, the greenway went down to somewhere, had a logical termini where it one day could be built, we could probably extend it down that one block. But if it's not even a plan,
right,
and we're going to sidewalk to nowhere again.
but I'm looking at right along
Smith Level
Road.
Depends on how much you eliminate on the east side, I have a feeling.
I think I asked this last time about extending it along Smith Level between those two, it's an intersection and a greenway. I think I asked that last time. Yeah, right along there. At least for students who are walking from Southern Village to, let's say, Carborough High School.
I mean,
that section was on the original plan.
At one time.
I mean, that's just a small section, but would that be helpful to add that? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I would think so. I mean, it certainly would help to clarify, you know, where Chapel Hill ought to be planning to.
Yep.
Let me ask this question. Are there any board members who want to make some kind of strong case for why we should build all that sidewalk on the east side between basically north of the BPW Club Road intersection, I think is where it is?
And just so I understand and clear, it's not, it's further north.
Down there.
It's further north than where you would walk to the high school, is that correct?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or the other end.
Or yeah.
Going north.
It's at the other
well,
end.
What we're doing here, okay. Zoom out just a little bit on that too, please.
So we're not talking about the southern end, we're talking about the northern
end.
And we're talking about.
See, because the end of development, basically this apartment complex has two points of access out onto Smith Level Road.
Right.
One is at BPW Club,
right.
where people would have a signalized crosswalk to use, which presumably is a nice safe feature. The other point of access right there to the right.
You mean going
isn't
down?
There? Well, the, yeah, right
going
there.
North.
There's a driveway coming out.
But don't we want to?
Isn't there?
Let's ask this question. Don't we want to encourage people to cross the street where it is the safest?
Right.
So wouldn't you want to put a sidewalk where you want people to cross, thereby encouraging them to use the sidewalk and not crossing where there is no sidewalk?
Right.
Which would save us some money.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No,
I mean,
I'm
throwing that out there.
We're brainstorming
together. So, Jeff,
together.
Point out where the crosswalk, the safe crosswalk, is on the stretch that we're talking about.
The southern end?
No. This
right
northern
here.
End that we're talking about potentially.
There, it's right there at BPW Club Road.
See,
you have a traffic light.
So everything to the right of that on the east side could potentially be eliminated. Is that what we're saying? Mark is asking if anybody has any problems with that.
I'm asking that question. Yeah, I mean, or maybe to the right of the lower
driveway. Because we don't want
folks
walking there.
And it ends now right across the street from Willow Oak, right?
Which is going to be impossible to cross safely.
Yeah.
It will have a painted crosswalk,
but
building the sidewalk, that's the problem, is by building the sidewalk, you're kind of leading people down to a crosswalk that isn't nearly as good.
Yeah, well, it's really kind of spooky, yeah.
That's also at the point of the hill that
you can't really see.
Really,
yeah. So that could be unsafe.
And there's not a bus stop on that other. Is there a bus just
on the east side?
On
not
the east
there.
Side.
There's
can't
one.
Be.
There's one right at just as it shows it there on to the right.
Yeah,
above.
That's BPW, but not
no,
south
I'm talking
of
about
further
it.
Down.
Further down.
Yeah.
Not until
not until FPG.
Okay.
Yeah, not until Frank Porter Graham.
So you could theoretically cross all the way down and just walk your way. You'd keep going because there would be a sidewalk right there, and then you'd cross at another safe place down at FPG.
That would be the idea.
Then I think you should remove the sidewalk
because
from the other side, because you're then going to encourage people to walk on the road and then try to cross where there is no crosswalk as opposed to, I don't know, you know. You walkers walk.
Aren't you guys are trying to apply common sense to government.
at least for this month.
Dan.
Could I, at this time, withdraw my motion and make an alternate motion?
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. I would like to move that with the town manager's scheduling agreement that we continue this public hearing to our September 28th public hearing night, and that specifically we have the opportunity to hear from the public on any particulars of the new design, that we get further perspective from staff and DOT on removing that east side section of sidewalk we're talking about, and we get further information on right-of-way and construction impacts on the Covenant House.
I'll second that.
And I'll say, because we typically, on things that are controversial, and you know, you say the two words, Smith Level, well, three, road, it still is, we're getting close to completion. And I think that we should indicate that September 28th, barring any insanity, we should all have the expectation that we were going to make a decision. Thus, by giving people time to look at the plan and us to kind of digest the newness of the plan.
Okay.
All right. Well, we probably don't have to go into the other room to look at the plan before we vote on that motion.
Right, but we could. If they want to go look at the plan, they could.
This is really good.
Okay.
All right, that's been moved by Dan, and it was seconded by Randy. September 28th, is that right? It's 3 weeks from today. We're not meeting on the 14th, so it's really, it's almost our next meeting, really.
Mike, does that work for you in terms of being able to reflect on those couple of questions?
We can start looking at some of these issues. I know the senior center one.
Right, and that east portion of sidewalk from BPW up to the
focusing on heading south with the east side sidewalk instead of north with the east side sidewalk, I guess, is basically the idea.
Mm-hmm. East and north.
That maybe another thing to consider is there may not be as much of an issue, the kind of encroachment on the senior center, if we are considering, you know, not having that sidewalk too.
Well, that's, can you scroll back over that way?
They need a little bit of a sidewalk there. They've been asking.
They have been asking. The sidewalk along, well, the sidewalk along Culbreth Road is definitely important.
That's from Culbreth.
But this BPW. One they could take to the bus stop and be safe.
Right.
Yeah.
Where is the bus stop? There?
Right beyond the
light. Well, just beyond BPW.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
That's
a bus pull up.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's okay.
So if they went out that way, they come this way as opposed to.
Well, and see, there's also senior housing that's further down. So, like, it's not just Shepherd House. There's another,
there's another
development.
There's independent living further down.
Yeah, what is that thing called? Anyway, but. Yeah, anyway, and folks there often walk.
Yeah.
Right.
Jeff, can you, I just want to see the other side again where we're talking about eliminating it.
The northern?
To the right.
Yeah, to the north. Just a little bit more.
Now, there is this development company that owns On-Site Corporation, LLC, whatever that is, owns this land that's down the hill from the apartment complex. And I think some of that is floodplain, but some of it is significantly potentially developable. But
by developers who can potentially build
That can be their problem.
Mark, can
I think that might also be in Chapel. Well, I'm not sure if it's in Harbor or not.
Can we also have Jeff and staff look into that piece from the potential Southern Village Greenway to
Mr. Mills?
Please.
I addressed that question, Mr. Mills. Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. Included.
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
All right. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. So we will take that up on the 28th.
Let's take a break.
We're going to. The bankers are getting quite a civics lesson.
Oh, I can break you.
We're going to go on break for 5 minutes.
So you said.
tower move, dude.
So we're still, sorry. She's not recused.
She's
yet.
Recused.
She's not recused yet. She can sit anywhere in the room she likes.
She's sitting over there.
Others in.
Oh, there you are.
All right. Welcome back to the September 7, 2010 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. The next item on our agenda is a request for board approval of a banking services contract. Let me start by recognizing Alderman Brown.
Hi.
When she's not ready. Sorry.
I know I have been asked to sort of reconsider my refusal, and so that everybody knows that when my mother passed, she did leave me some BB&T stock. And so I'm still very uncomfortable with making a decision with regards to the bank, because BB&T is involved, and I'm just uncomfortable with that. And for me, it's very important that when government works, as it works, that people have confidence, people aren't making a decision based upon some financial interest they may have, either small or large or what have you. Certainly I've been asked to reconsider, and you know, I've thought about it, and I'm still thinking about it, but I don't really want to reconsider, because the appearance of impropriety is really important.
I respect that. Yeah.
No. And Joel's job professionally is partly to enforce the
lobbying compliance
and ethics rules in state.
It's a difficult thing, and I think it just would be best for the board. I know it's kind of tough being 3-3, but I think y'all might need to think about it, because I've thought about it. And I know some of you have asked me very, very much why I did it, and I just think it's really important. It's not a bad thing that other people, you know, both sides have asked about it, and so...
Yeah, okay. I'd like to move that we recuse Alderman Hall Brown from this item.
We've all already done that.
Already done it then.
I mean, you don't have to vote on that.
No, I don't think you have. I mean, the issue is still the same issue.
Okay, so we're
all right,
going
well,
on.
Okay. Thanks, are there proposals from board members about how to proceed on the
I have process? A motion I'd like to float. I'd like to move that contingent on their receiving, on their satisfactory resolution of the OTS issue by December 31st, 2010, that after that resolution, that the town banking contract services contract be awarded to Harrington Bank.
I can work with that. I think that they'd need to be able to show compliance. Could we set a window at which they would have to be able to show it? Because our contract is up with Bank of America by December. Is that right?
The current contract extension with Bank of America expires December 31st, and they've agreed that they would continue on a month-by-month basis if requested after that.
Okay. And so can you clarify whether it's a part of your motion, what we would do in the event that this matter is not resolved with OTS by that time?
If the matter is not resolved, then we... I don't know whether we would want to stay with Bank of America or whether, I think at that point, if it's not resolved, we reconsider it between people who have banks that have submitted proposals and Bank of America. What do you suggest we do?
Well, I would think that our if it's not resolved by a certain deadline, that we would probably go with BB&T, since that was, you know, essentially the judgment of about half of the board.
That would be the way I would see that it should play out.
Okay, so I will.
So that is your motion.
I will. Yes, that is the motion.
Okay, is there a second for that?
Wait, let's go back to my original question. Because my original question is, if December 31st, we wouldn't be meeting till January at that point. So I'm wondering, should we not set that to our last meeting in November or December? Just what I'm saying, well, so that we have enough.
Well, but I think part of the point of my suggestion to Jackie about how to modify that motion is there won't really be anything to I mean,
there'll be an automatic.
They either make that. I mean, the staff will know what to do either way. Put it that way.
And compliance would mean some sort of communication from OTS stating that it's resolved to their satisfaction.
Yes. And that that communication is shared with us.
Okay. And then so staff could have the judgment to understand. Mm-hmm.
Is there a second for Jackie's motion?
Randy
seconded
it
on that condition.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, over the last week, I've had different folks come up to me and advocate for Harrington, and they do have a very good reputation in our community. But I'm going to stay with my original vote of voting that I feel like we should go ahead and extend the offer to BB&T right now, and I'd be in support of course, if Harrington doesn't get it, having to go to BB&T in December.
I think it's a compromise. I think it may be the way in which to get out of this deadlock, but I don't agree with the grounds on which we're making that. I don't feel that this black mark by the OTS on Harrington is as reflective as the non-black mark that is not on BB&T from its having needed to receive so much money in the financial meltdown. So it's not really an issue that I find significant, the OTS issue. But having said that, for the sake of getting out of the deadlock and because I'm confident that OTS will hopefully, give the green light, that I'll probably be in favor of this resolution, and if not, if the black mark isn't taken off, I would hope that we would definitely consider Harrington in the future. But beyond that, I would hope that we could encourage as a town and have this be demonstrative of the kind of support that as a town we are giving local businesses and encouraging local banks to establish themselves in our town so that it's not a monopoly of local banks and that we do have a true option of localness to choose from. So a call out to all people who want to be bankers of Carrboro.
All right. Steve had a clarifying question.
And then I want to make a statement.
Yeah, I just... If this motion passes, I just want to make sure before you all vote that we understand exactly what that means, because you all's last scheduled meeting is December 7th, and you wouldn't come back until the second full week in January. So am I correct to assume that if you all vote on the motion at hand, that if for some reason Harrington didn't get the clearance from OTS as of December 31st, then we'd be authorized to go ahead and execute a contract with BB&T, assuming that they would still execute a contract.
And I think, in other words, yes. I think that's what the motion means. And in other words, that this matter does, if this motion passed, this matter presumably wouldn't need to come back before the Board of Aldermen at any point.
That was my.
Except we would want to.
Oh, except, I mean, posted, I guess years from now when the contract is up.
But, and we would want to be kept posted. And
well, yeah, I mean, I
naturally.
Certainly wouldn't.
You're going to stonewall us.
Mr. Attorney.
I just want to make. Is it clear to those who, I guess, Steve, meaning you, who would have to make that determination, or to the board, what it is that you'd be looking to get from OTS or whatever they're called?
The OTS is the Office of Thrift Supervision.
Sees it.
Confirmation that they
It needs to show complete compliance and that they've been cleared of any.
It's a letter of final resolution.
Right, whatever.
It was ended.
Right.
Right.
With the issue that
If I had any question about what was produced, I would seek counsel from folks who would know what it meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I've
never seen one, so I don't.
Yeah, I have no idea either.
I just want to say that, the last week when we were talking about this, the issue of timing is really important, and I saw this as the decision making in this is having four very shaky posts of the table of decision making. One was that we have a new finance director who's in transition. Two, of course, this question of the OTS procedural questions. And I think over the next 4 months, I'm hoping that those two will really stabilize. The other two that I mentioned last week, of course, one is the general economic landscape, and probably most important is, the inexperience of Harrington with municipal banking. But I feel that I feel confident that Arch, with another couple of months under his belt, he'll know what he's called to do, and that the finance department will be ready to help guide any transition. So that's just to clarify where I've come in the last week.
Okay.
Great.
Call for questions. Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter passes 4-2. All right.
Well, that was an adventure.
Thanks, Jack.
Still going to be an adventure for somebody, not me.
May I return now?
Yes, please join us. All right. We're now on to a discussion of the Water and Sewer Management Planning and Boundary Agreement. Mr. Manager.
I think Trish McGuire has a couple of slides to clarify some leftover issues, and then Perdita Holtz is also here with Orange County.
It's only like 5 or 10% of the city of Melbourne.
So this item is coming back to you. You all looked at these changes in April and in May, and at that time asked for some additional information. You have taken action on the Hillsborough portion of the amendments dealing with changes to the descriptions of service areas. This item is dealing with the water and sewer bound. Sorry, I didn't read the title of the item, but the proposed amendments to the water and sewer management planning and boundary agreement. And so in May, you asked for some feedback from the county commissioners regarding the their interest or and their policies and position with regard to the protection of historic resources in the area that is affected by the changes in the map for the from the long-range plan for the effluent area. And so the county commissioners have provided these changes actually have come about as a result of the effluent Mebane small area plan, which was adopted back in 2006. And they do specific your questions focused in on the on one portion of the small area plan, which was primarily the Bowman Road area, mixed use area in Effland. And I'm just going to skim these through these. Perdita's here and can answer any questions you may have about the plan itself. But we did receive a letter from the county commissioners, which describes their efforts and their commitment to the protection, the evaluation and protection of historic resources throughout the county, and specifically in relation to the changes proposed in the to the agreement. And so this letter is attached to the agenda item, and I've just called out on the slide here the specific references that the commissioners have made. Particularly, first of all, that the small area plan itself recommends that any projects that take place in this area minimize any impacts to historic resources. Next, that the county's environmental impact ordinance requires environmental assessments and or environmental impact statements, depending on a project's impacts, for most development projects that would be proposed in the area. There, the county's zoning and subdivision reviews also include an evaluation of cultural and environmental considerations. And finally, the county's broad commitment to this, to these actions, which involve the efforts they've taken both in their own developments and in the review of other projects that include assessing cultural resources and making plans for protecting them. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to try and answer them. But I'm not the best person to do that.
How much of Mebane is in Orange County? That is, what percentage of Mebane is in Orange County? And how many acres is that?
I don't know the acreage, but I would estimate that about 14% of the city's jurisdiction is in Orange County.
And that includes
city limits and
each district. Okay.
16.
She said 15.
15.
Estimate.
But this plan increases that somewhat significantly.
Yeah, can we go back to the? Do you have a map?
The
that's a pretty good map right there.
Okay.
Okay. So about
the ETJ of Mebane actually extends pretty far east of that dark orange area. Trisha, do you have a map that maybe shows the ETJ?
I think the other map shows, let's see. No, it just shows the long-term interest area, but that, I think, includes the,
Now, well, I got a question.
Yes, ma'am.
And should Mebane decide that they wanted to do something without having county oversight, which I think there's a discussion about that. They could just annex it and be done with it, right?
They will be annexing.
Well, now wait a minute. I'm saying they could right now.
I think they could.
Probably could, particularly if the developer asked for a voluntary annexation, which is not hard to imagine.
Right.
But now, what is the situation? Remind me, because I believe you told us last time that under this, that the county is in essence trying to enter into an agreement with Mebane under which this developments in this area would be approved under the county, by the county.
The county and the city of Mebane currently have a utility service agreement that requires that permits and development approvals be done under Orange County regulations before it's annexed by the city of Mebane in this area. This area is not covered under that agreement, but we intend to go back and amend the agreement if we're able to put it into primary service area to be under that agreement with the same terms.
Okay.
So if they don't agree to it, Mebane could go ahead and annex it and say, hey, Orange County, we made the attempt.
Yes, under state law they could.
There you go.
This map does show the city limits and ETJs. So the darker gray areas are the city limit areas within city limits, and these lighter gray areas are ETJ.
Okay.
Well, I'm.
And the yellow is the small area. Is that right?
That is the urban designated area, which is a term from the small area plan. It's changing over percentage.
The current land use designation, a small area plan, actually covered a bit more than the yellow area, but not that much more.
It is covered by the
plan. Okay, well, I, for one, feel that I have been heard, at least to some degree, about this. I'm not sure that I'm 100% convinced about the direction of the entire plan, but I wanted to be heard on the point about the significance of the cultural resources, the historical resources along Bowman Road, and I'm satisfied with the commissioner's response to that issue, and particularly on the assumption that it is our county commissioners who will sort of make the ultimate permit issuing decisions about the area. So I'm prepared to vote on it.
Okay.
For my part,
I was prepared to vote last time. For the reasons that,
Move attachment A.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any other comments?
My only other comment is I always want to keep it in the view of we don't like it when we're limited, as we were in the Northern Transition Area for commercial properties.
Right.
And now you see the evidence of that because we don't have any commercial properties, but for the fact that the Ballantyne folk are coming back.
Right.
So I just would say we need to keep that in mind. That's all.
That's part of the reason I'm not delving any further into this than I already have. All right.
Absolutely.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter passes 6-1. All right. Thank you. That's okay.
Dan's the outlier.
Now, Dan said he had a whole different set of issues with this, and he explained them last time. All right.
Plus, I discovered that Joel and I had been on the same side of every vote this year. We have to disagree once.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
I was starting to get worried as a newcomer that we didn't know how to say no.
Oh, we do.
No, don't worry.
No,
you ask Mike Mills whether we know how to say no. All right. Consideration. So I believe that just puts us on consideration of whether to adopt a resolution exempting the town of Carrboro from automatic extension of the Permit Extension Act of 2009.
And Trish has a presentation if you want it. If you don't need it, then she won't do it.
I'm ready to vote on this.
If we vote for the resolution, then the permits expire when?
2011. December 2011.
The clock starts, if you opt out, then the clock starts ticking on January 1st, 2011.
And by the clock starts ticking, what do you mean by that?
That means that, let me just see if I have it. That means that there are two different situations. There are permits that were issued prior to January 1, 2008. And they were still active. Those permits, whatever remaining time they had on them, has been suspended. Essentially, it hasn't been proceeded since
been
then.
Stopped.
The clock has been stopped, and it is stopped through the end of this year, December 31st. If you opt out of the Permit Extension Act on January 1, 2011, the clock starts ticking again, and those permits, whatever remaining time they had on them, will then. Okay. Proceed.
And if we don't opt out, then it pauses again.
It pauses again for another year.
Do you happen to have a list of the projects that are affected by this?
I know the, yes, I do. Sorry about that. I mean, it's not a neat and tidy list, I'm afraid, but it's fairly tidy.
I mean, I don't know if it matters really because I wouldn't want to make my decision based on whether or not I like a particular project. I think that would be wrong.
Okay.
But, you know, we.
But I'd still like
as
to know.
Just to, so we have a sense of what we're talking about. But, I, you know, my gut reaction is I pretty much stand by the permit issuing decisions we've made over the last several years.
Block out
so
the side because the numbers
I don't. I mean.
Yeah.
I can't think of a big mistake that we made from my point of view that I would care to reconsider, but.
Okay, so. And this is a working copy, so. Of a calendar. So these are the projects that we have in place currently that have issued permits. The ones at the top of the list going down to Winmore are projects that were approved prior to January 1, 2008. And had active permits at the time the Permit Extension Act was passed.
Okay.
And then the projects down below are those projects that have been approved since January 1, 2008, and so are fall into the second category, which means there's been no time advanced on those permits whatsoever. So whenever the clock resumes, they begin at zero. And so.
Trish,
and so the issue is these projects, some of them would expire sooner without the extension continuing, and they may have to come back and ask for extensions or whatever.
And ultimately, the difference it makes is essentially 1 year for them.
Yes, that's right.
Right. And
right now,
if the developer of the Litchfield AIS comes back let's say it's the clock restarts January 1st, 2010, they have 3 years or something, it says, in the permit to pursue their application. At the end of that 3 years, there's a process for them to ask for further extensions. Is that right, under the ordinance?
Yeah.
Are they allowed just one further extension, or they're potentially allowed multiple further extensions? And I think there are some standards in the ordinance, if I recall. They have to show some due diligence or show that the market was, that they just couldn't do it, basically.
Right. The standards are not rigorous.
But there are some.
There are some.
Trish, would you explain, if we opt out, how that impacts staff time?
Well, it varies from project to project, but it's going to be discussing with the applicant what their options are, preparing agenda items, processing their request for an extension.
Depending upon how,
Well, very simply, we were trying to explain that there's a cost associated with it, both for the staff and for the owner of the permit, the holder of the permit, and it may involve, the risk is that, and this can be a positive or a negative, depending on your perspective, but the risk is that something may have changed significantly if they did come back, and this will happen, I think, regardless. There will be some projects that their permits will be close to expiring. They'll ask for extensions. They'll be in the situation where something may have changed. The board may not want to extend their permit. The circumstances may not be there. Then the regulations may have changed. They may have to go back and pay for more engineering, more design. That's the most significant risk. And as I said, that can be a positive for the folks. If we want to see projects that have to meet some changed regulation, it can be a negative on the side of an owner who's spent a lot of money.
Surely if we change a regulation, it would be because we want projects to meet it.
Correct. But the timing of that sometimes can, in this situation, can just mean a project may have spent a considerable sum and it's sort of advanced, hoping that they wouldn't have a change, and then that can change. So, but it's probably best to consider those.
Well, I certainly am not looking to put more pressure on your department, that's for sure.
Yeah, some of these projects are a lot more exciting, I think, for the Board of Aldermen than others, but certainly, for example, with 300 East Main Street, I think we'd like to do what we can to be supportive, or I would like to do what I can to be supportive of them managing
to
build.
We'll give them an extension. We don't need to rely on the state to do it.
Well, it's true, and I think we would have given probably every one of these projects an extension given the circumstance, but
there might be one I wouldn't give an extension.
Well,
yeah, I'm thinking the same.
I wonder if we're thinking of the same.
You can whisper it to me after the meeting.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you want? Do you guys want to? Is there a motion?
I move it half an A.
Which would
second it.
That's
to exempt us.
Restart the clock January 1st, 2010, right. Essentially. Okay.
You mean 12?
No.
10.
2010.
11.
11. 11. 11. 11. Sorry. This coming January.
So if you vote a vote of yes,
we'll restart the clock 2011.
11.
A vote of no would restart the clock January 1st, 2012.
Hmm.
Do you follow me?
Yeah. I do follow you.
Did I say it right?
I do. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to. Well, y'all be here today.
And how many would expire next year if we opt out? They're 2 year permits, is that right?
3 years.
3 year permits.
3 years, is that right?
I would say two. A couple of them. Two? Oh, okay. Level. Two of them.
Well, they would expire if we didn't grant them extensions.
Well, they'll have to come and ask for extensions.
Right. I was correcting 2 years, not 3 years.
So it's 2 years.
Oh, 2 years,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So an opt-in may be more work, so I'm clear. An opt-in to have a legislative extension may or may not be more work?
It would not be more
work.
It would give them another year to, like, get their act together to start the project.
I'm thinking about staff, not.
It'd be less work, right?
Be less work for staff.
I mean, that may not be the deciding factor for you all, but it would mean there would be no processing of the extensions because it'd be automatic.
Opting
out would have to involve more extensions being applied for. I mean, presumably, logically.
Right. Well, let me just be clear that then.
But I don't think that was the state's motivation.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm just saying, and as the manager pointed out, it doesn't necessarily need, I mean, none of it is so much that it needs to be anybody's deciding factor. I'm just pointing out, I think that's just logically, obviously, there would have to be more.
Sorry, extensions. Randy.
No, I'm just wondering, is. In terms of the developers, I mean, is it more troublesome for them if we opt out or opt in, or is it a wash? I mean, it sounds like it depends on the project, right?
No, it's more troublesome for them if we opt out, because then when it takes away what could be an extra year to get their project together so they can get it off the ground. Unless they come and ask.
300 East Main Street, for example, would have to, if we pass this resolution, if the vote is aye on this resolution, they would have basically from January 1st, 2011, starting on that date, next January 1st, 2 years.
That's right.
If the result is no on this, then effectively they would have 3 years from the same date.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to vote for this for the simple reason that I don't like the state messing in our business on this kind of stuff. I think this is our job to approve these permits and to grant extensions when they're warranted.
But then, on the other hand, let me just say, with the economy the way it is, do we want to have projects that we already approved based upon the information that we had then to have to come back to us and ask for more time, which is, you know, the clock is ticking in terms of money. And I guess that's sort of, I mean, I'm not.
Well, that does kind of inform us.
Yeah, I mean, I just.
But you remember a little over a year ago was when the Valentine thing, you know, they came back with several others.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know if how big a deal it was for you all, but for us, you know, it was a pretty quick discussion to approve four of those extensions, including asking Ballantyne to get some commercial in. And that's the kind of thing when it comes back to us.
Which they've been responsive to.
Right, which they've been responsive. That's true.
Right, and without that.
I like having that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's an argument for it.
Well, right, and that was what was in my thinking, that even though it's maybe more work for staff, in a handful of projects, it may be that further on down the line, the situation allows for more creativity in a plan if we maintain our autonomy.
Okay.
The other point is climate change is more undeniable today than it was a year ago. And so as these projects come back, maybe they'll be a little more sensitive in pushing for measures that can be more energy efficient and whatnot. So that's why I would be in favor of having.
I'm all for and whatnot.
Well,
especially 10-15.
I'll just give a very brief comment in the other direction, which is, you know, I think it's going to be certainly at least another year, if not a couple more years before the, you know, financing situation and the economic situation in the United States is such that that very many of these projects can be built. And so I see the point you're making, Dan, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think realistically I don't really have a problem with the state's estimate of what kind of timeline these projects are going to additionally need. And I think also, while I sympathize very much with the points that both of you all made about the state interfering with us, let me point out that as a compromise on that issue,
They gave us
an option.
To opt out.
To opt in or out. That doesn't mean you have to opt out in order to exercise your option. They give us an option. So,
you're not confident that the new Republican Congress is going to turn the economy around next year?
Oh, I think they're going to turn the economy some direction.
I feel a prediction.
Call a question.
All right. All those in favor of the resolution, which would start the clock again January 1st, 2011, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
Nay.
Nay. Matter passes 5-2.
All right. I thought that was 4-3.
I only heard two nays.
You.
Nay.
Did you nay?
And Charles.
Oh, Jack.
What are you
nay?
Were you a nay? Oh, yes
nay.
Or no?
I was a yes.
Okay.
Okay. So it's 4-3. I'm sorry. Jackie, Joel, and I voted no. All right. Motion passes. There's not a request for an executive session.
Nope.
Are there any?
One. Just
terrified
one.
To ask. Are there any matters from the board?
Just one question. When can we sort of expect an answer about the Culbreth traffic road UNC stuff? The truck
petition?
Going to the landfill in Chatham County traffic thing?
Well, Jeff has been out with his shoulder.
Okay, no problem.
Just got back in the office today, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it because we're trying to get ready for it.
No problem. I'll ask again on the 28th.
I don't know.
I can be patient.
But maybe you can let us know what an expected time will be on that.
We will follow up.
Just because I know citizens don't ask me, so I was just going to ask since I'm here. That's it.
And if there's any more information you all could share.
Sure.
About time. So
okay.
I happen to be on that road fairly frequently. I must be missing something.
Okay.
I haven't seen it. But.
Okay. I'll ask.
Anything else from the board? Manager?
Move to return.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. 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 Aye.